This nation was founded on the principle that all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear.
Isn't it equal?
From WDET in Detroit, this is Created Equal. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm here in the studio with Carrie Jr. II, who is our show's producer. Carrie, hey.
Good morning, Stephen. Yeah. I have my coffee with me this morning because I want to make sure I stay alert.
You might need it because what we're talking about today is a little bit complicated.
Yeah.
Let's go back and remember a little bit what's happened in the process that we use in Michigan to decide how legislative and congressional districts get drawn. In 2018, we decided that we were going to let citizens handle that process rather than politicians. And we changed the Constitution to make that possible. They did that work. We selected 13 ordinary citizens who decided how those districts would look for the next 10 years. But the process didn't end there.
Right.
There was some real questions about what they did and whether it respected enough of the issues like voting rights and minority representation that are federal requirements. And so some challengers from the city of Detroit said, hey, we don't like these maps. We think they are not giving enough due to minority voting rights. And so they went to court. And they got a court to say, yeah, this is a problem, that the way these maps were drawn doesn't respect enough of those boundaries. In fact, what they said was that they relied too much on race in the way that they were drawn. So they sent the commissioners, the 13
back
commissioners,
to
back to work.
back to the drawing
table
board.
In the middle of an election, which will be the second election under this cycle. Every 10 years, the census triggers a redraw of maps. We've already had one election under these maps in 2022. This will be the second. And so now we have a new set of maps that look pretty different than what we had before, but they are right now just for the state house, which is up for election this year. The state Senate doesn't come up for election again until 2026. Those maps will also be redrawn, though.
That's right. The federal courts did approve those maps. And so now we hope that, you know, we'll see what these maps will mean for the primary and general legislative elections. But still, we need to wait to see. And the commission has to go back to the drawing board on the state Senate map. So very complicated process, but I'm glad we have our guests today to help us through it.
Well, I mean, and I think the interest for us here at Created Equal is this central question about how these maps handle minority voting rights. The Voting Rights Act of 1965, as well as the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, really require sensitivity when you're thinking about how you draw maps in areas where you have significant numbers of African Americans. Mm-hmm. And Detroit, of course, is the largest jurisdiction like that here in the city of, or in the state of Michigan. The idea of making sure that Black Detroiters and African Americans in the suburbs, in fact, have the opportunity to elect people who look like them. That is a federal imperative. Even as shredded as the Voting Rights Act is under this particular Supreme Court, that's still something you got to think about. And so how that works is what's at issue here. And we will see what the difference is in 2024. In 2022, we lost a lot of African-American representation in the legislature.
And the way this process works, too, is another thing to think about. The commission itself being independent citizens who are coming together and really putting their brains together and handling this very dense topic to find a way to draw these maps in a fair way.
Yeah. I mean, I always say this, we're talking about this, hats off to the 13 people who are doing this work. They're ordinary citizens who raised their hand and said they want to be part of this process. They've taken a lot of flack for what they've done. But they're all, I think it's fair to say, they're all just trying to do their best to be part of the democratic process all of us would be better if more of us thought that way.
I wonder how much longer they'll want to keep doing this process now that they've gone through this and gone back and forth.
It's been pretty rough. So we've got two great guests to talk about this, two reporters who have been covering this story pretty closely. Colin Jackson is a reporter with the Gangwar News, or I'm sorry, with the Michigan Public Radio Network in Lansing. Colin, welcome to Created Equal.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and Ben Sullis is the reporter with Gangwar News Service, also in Lansing. He's been covering this as well. Ben, welcome back to
Created Equal.
Yeah. So I want to talk first about where we are in this process, and I guess who's happy, and I guess who's not. So Ben, let's start with you. The plaintiffs in this case, the challengers from the city of Detroit said that the maps that were drawn in advance of the 2022 elections didn't give African-American voters enough opportunity to select people from our community to represent us in Lansing. These maps were redrawn. Let's start there. Are the plaintiffs satisfied with this outcome?
It appears that they are. You know, they released a statement once the court ruled, and the statement gave no indication that they were looking to appeal. They kind of like said, this is as good as it's going to get, and we appreciate the public input that they listen to us, even through the process of this, you know, trying to collect input on the maps, not just the lawsuit, not just the proofs and briefs that they filed. They were active in the process of trying to, you know, let the commission know what they wanted. They did indicate that they wanted more minority representation than what is offered in the new map, which is titled Motown Sound, aptly. And that was not the case with the court. The court found it to be at least good enough to remedy the race-based concerns of the other map. But also, it did increase minority representation a lot more than the Hickory map, which is the 2021 map that was adopted. So are they happy? I'm not sure. But, you know, are they comfortable with it? I guess for now they are.
Yeah. So also, Ben, talk about what the courts have said about these maps. The courts had declared that the process that the 13 commissioners had used to come up with the maps we used in 2022 were in violation of the 14th Amendment's protection against racial discrimination. In other words, they relied too much on race in the way that they drew the districts. What's the reaction here to this new map?
Yeah, definitely. You know, as we had talked about before, their charge was to go back and draw this race blind, and they did that. And the map that was put forward really deviates quite a bit from that Hickory plan, which was what the name of it was in 2021. One of the big features of the Hickory plan, which is the map adopted previously, is that there were these long, spindly kind of spokes reaching out from Detroit, grabbing up population and other counties to the north of Detroit. And this map does not feature that. In fact, I mean, if there are like a little bit of, you know, extraneous extensions, there's not many of them. It's mostly contained to the city of Detroit, which is one of the things that the plaintiffs really wanted. And aside from that, they have increased the majority black districts quite a bit. So there were six in the original map. Now there's eight. And what is it? There were, I think, zero opportunity districts, and now there's quite a few. So that it is different. It is much more apt for minority representation, and I think that was what the goal was, just try to increase that as much as possible, while also not drawing with race in mind. I mean, there's two kind of things happening here, the race-based drawing, but also ensuring that representation, and it looks like this map does both.
Yeah. Okay, so Colin Jackson, this was a pretty messy process. I mean, it was a messy process from the beginning, I think, because you had 13 commissioners, ordinary citizens who didn't have to have any background in this process or in politics, sitting around and trying to come up with the way that we will be represented for the next 10 years in Lansing and also in Washington. And then, of course, it got messier after they did their job and we had an election. And the court said that doesn't work. So go back and do it again. So I want to get you to talk about what you notice while you have been reporting on this story, the things that have kind of played into this process, and where this messiness, I guess, reared its head, and how it leaves us at this point.
Yeah, so I think, I mean, there's a lot of different ways you can see this process, and obviously this was Michigan's first time embarking on it, so there was really no roadmap leading up to this. I mean, we've seen maybe other states can be used as examples, but for the Michigan specific example, there really wasn't any roadmap for how to go about this. So like you said, you have 13 people with really no political affiliations. Political affiliations were discouraged, or rather people can identify as Democrats, Republicans, et cetera, but they don't have the meaningful political connections of the consultants, you could say, that were heavily involved in the process before, when the legislature was the one drawing these maps. And we saw that, you know, you get 13 random people trying to do anything and try to get them to all agree on something. It's going to be really hard, you know, and this has been what we've seen as roughly a representative process. You know, you have people that felt, and it's not even just a matter of how they feel politically about things, but just whether or not they work together as people. And I think that's been a sticking point and a major point of contention for the commission itself, where they feel like maybe at times they've gotten an unfair shake just because of the way they've been criticized for doing X thing or Y thing. And there have been many reasons to legitimately criticize the commission, you know, whether there's been concerns about them giving themselves pay raises or continuing to draw their full salary, their full constitutional salary, rather, despite actually being done with the work they were assigned years ago at this point, or early on there was a case of them going behind closed doors, mm-hmm. and what that meant. And we've seen all of this shake out on one side of the thing, where there's kind of the messiness and the drama and the infighting you see between commissioners that don't necessarily get along. But then the other side of it is, despite all of that, they did come together when it came time to it. They did train new members after we had three resignations last year, and they did finish the job that they were ostensibly hired to do. So there's kind of a few different ways of looking at this, and I wonder which one is going to affect their legacy more.
Yeah. When we think about the people who were involved in this process, Colin, and how they kind of found their way through it, I'm always curious about the dynamics that emerged from those interactions. I mean, again, I have an enormous amount of respect for the people who raised their hands and said, yeah, I would like to participate in this. And we did have a lot of folks who did it, and then they randomly drew the names to decide who the 13 would be. But talk about how they worked through this process to come to a state where they could talk about these things and make these decisions. What was the air like in the room as they were doing this, and not just for the first draw of the maps, but for this redraw, which I think, you know, ratchets up the anxiety and the stakes quite a bit.
Right. So I came aboard to the Michigan Public Radio Network, right, I would say, when the commission was originally getting in the swing of things back in 2021. So I wasn't around for the early, early days when they were first assembling, mm-hmm. meeting, kind of getting to know each other. But from what I've seen from that point onward is that a lot of it was relying on their experts, and a lot of it was taking time to fall into the groove. So in terms of, you would expect when people come in, you have a certain amount of independents, a certain amount of Democrats, a certain amount of Republicans. Obviously, one of the reasons why you want partisans on an independent commission is so those partisan interests are being protected. And then the same reason why you have the independents on the commission is to be moderating forces. And I think what we saw was, yes, people kind of had their initial wills or desires for the maps, and we saw that play out on smaller scales. But a lot of the main disagreements I saw once the commission actually got into the full swing of things, mm-hmm. was more along actual substantive issues, like how to interpret expert advice, or how to or even just kind of some of the little interpersonal things that you saw between independent commissioners, or where you saw Democrat and Republican commissioners teaming up with some other independent commissioners to do what they saw as the best thing for the state or for the maps. And it seemed like the commission did, for the most part, take its job very seriously when it came down to that. Or at least that's what you see, even in some of the committee meetings when they were being criticized or when they were fighting with one another. The focus, even though some external things were being brought into it, it seemed like it always kind of came back down to what at least they personally believed was best for Michigan.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue talking with Colin Jackson and Ben Solis about the redistricting process, these new maps, which will govern the way we vote for our state House representatives during the primary and general election here in 2024. We'd love to hear from you as well on Twitter. Give us a shout. Let us know what you think of these newly redrawn maps. Are you happy with them? Are you happy with the changes? Do you think minority representation will be better cared for under this new drawing? You can at WDET or hashtag Created Equal. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. This is Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you've joined. We've got two guests with us today. Ben Solis is a reporter for Gongwer News Service in Lansing. Colin Jackson is a reporter for the Michigan Public Radio Network. We're talking about the new maps that will govern the way we vote for our state House representatives in 2024 in Michigan. Michigan is in the middle of a pretty grand experiment in Democratic participation. We threw out the old way of doing it, where politicians would go behind closed doors and make the decisions about how our districts looked away from the eyes of the public. Now we have a commission of 13 ordinary citizens who go through the same process, but do it much more publicly. And their decisions are what rule the end maps, not those of politicians. That process started in 2022 when we had the first map drawn by these 13 commissioners. But a challenge from several people in the city of Detroit to those maps resulted in a redraw, a pretty frantic redraw, in fact, this year that is now done. And we've got a different set of maps that we're looking at. We're talking with Ben and Colin about what that redraw means, what it looks like, and how it will play out in the primary and general election this year. We would love to hear from you, our listeners, as well. Go to Twitter and at WDET or hashtag Created Equal. Tell us what you think about this redraw. Tell us what you think about citizen drawing of maps. Do you think this is working? Is this a Democratic experiment gone wrong? Or is it a Democratic experiment that is just finding its footing? Ben and Colin, I want to start this part of the program talking about how race and community, I guess, bump up against each other in this process. What the court said when they ordered the redraw of the maps was that the maps relied too much on race, that they accounted for race far too much. And they said, look, you've got to do this more blindly. The result is a map that has more respect, really, for community boundaries. For instance, there are several more Detroit-only districts on this map than were before, and places like Oakland County and Macomb County are also more intact. I want to talk about that tension that exists between the idea of community and the idea of districts that give minority voters a good chance to elect people who look like them, and what we might see change this time. So, Colin, can you talk about the places where this race versus community issue, I guess, are more, maybe the most pointed, where the places where where listeners or voters could see the dramatic difference between the old map and the new one?
Well, I would say some of the main issues, especially if you follow along this riverfront, the districts there where you see kind of how Grosse Pointe is drawn in with like Harper Woods, for example, or East Point. And obviously all of Detroit, you know, you see this as a issue where the older maps, like Ben had mentioned earlier, they had kind of carved up Detroit with its northern and kind of wider suburbs for that matter. So you had these almost like pinstripe districts where you had a sliver of Detroit plus some of Oakland County. And now you see where you have 11 districts where Black people make up either the majority or the plurality of expected primary voters. Mm-hmm. And that was something that was a major point of contention with the old maps where they were saying that their experts had used faulty data or by not fully comparing primary data to make the case that Black voters were capable of electing their candidate of choice. With the old maps, they were saying that was a flawed system, or at least that was a concern with it. So now that we're seeing some of these districts that even do mesh into Oakland County, that include your Ferndales or your Oak Parks, for example, those are still majority Black districts, according to the commission's VRA analysis. And one of the ranked criteria within the redistricting commission is keeping communities of interest together. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's not explicitly defined, or it's loosely defined, just to read from it, populations that share cultural, historical characteristics, economic interests. And that can mean a lot of different things. But with this specific redraw process, when one of the reasons why these maps were declared invalid by the courts was because the courts found that they were drawn disproportionately based on race, it's kind of hard to square that with making sure you keep communities of interest together when the commission decided this time around the way to get around having these maps invalidated by being drawn predominantly based on race was they ignored race throughout the first part of the process. So you had ethnic groups being able to be discussed, like Hispanic communities around Southwest Detroit or Arab communities closer to Dearborn. The commission was able to discuss those, but they weren't able to discuss keeping Black communities together mm-hmm. throughout the first part of the redistricting about this latest redraw process. And that was another point where we saw kind of this contention between general communities of interest and race itself.
Yeah. Ben, this also bumps up against some political considerations. After the redraw in 2021 and the first election in 2022, we saw Democrats win the majority in both the House and Senate for the first time in 40 years or so. And the redraw was credited with, in large part, making that possible. At the same time, of course, we lost Black representation in the House and in the Senate. So talk about how those two considerations kind of bump up against each other and what the new maps, the redraw, does to those kinds of considerations.
Yeah, certainly. You know, and that that idea of this new Democratic-led legislature being, you know, elected essentially because of the way that these maps are drawn and the fact that some of those seats did not have Black representation was, you know, as you mentioned, the crux of this lawsuit. And I think at one point, once the map was completed, this newer one, one of the objections that the plaintiffs did raise was that it keeps incumbents intact. There's no incumbent matchups mm-hmm. On the new map. Mm-hmm. And their argument was that, well, we want, special elections we want, you know, fewer of these safe seats for incumbents because they were essentially elected on an unconstitutional map. The court rejected that. But, you know, as we can see in the new map, they really only redrew solidly Democratic districts. Mm-hmm. And the way that they drew them kind of kept them all very solidly Democratic. The only one that is, you know, a little bit stronger for the Republicans and makes it a potentially a competitive seat is the new 13th district, which Colin mentioned, which has Roseville, Central St. Clair Shores,
Macomb
Warren.
County. Yes.
Yes, Macomb County. So, you know, more Republican, but still, you know, leaning Democratic. So we shouldn't see too many changes in terms of that representation in this area. And, you know, really it comes down to candidates. But, yeah. You know, for the most part, the incumbents are going to stay where they're at and probably going to enjoy a pretty comfortable seat.
Yeah. we will also see a redraw of the Senate, the state Senate districts. That won't happen probably all that quickly because the Senate's not up for another 2 years. But the same considerations will have to be taken into account there. Is it more likely that we would see a partisan change that would accompany the redraw in the Senate than we are in the House?
It's really, to be seen, especially since they have not really put their minds together about how they're going to redraw these maps. Mm-hmm. And I think that there are fewer Senate districts that they actually have to draw than the House redraw.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be maybe easier for them. And as you mentioned, the timeline is not so truncated as it was for the House elections because they needed a map before the candidate filing deadline later this month. So it's tough to say. Again, you think about the area, and the area is strongly Democratic, except for when you start to go more towards Oakland County and Macomb County. So it's a process that we're gonna have to see if that's how it shakes out. Again, the point of this is to look at these maps, draw them race blind, and see how these things shake out. Partisan fairness is obviously one of the higher ranked criteria, so they've got to make sure that is representative, but it's still a work in progress. It's yet to be seen.
Yeah. Colin, I want to get your reaction also to the partisan aspect of all of this, and maybe what we're hearing from Democrats and Republicans about this redraw and how it changes their view of the maps and their view of what they might have to do this year to win as many seats as they can.
I mean, for the House, as far as what Ben was saying, I mean, these are still relatively safe Democratic districts. Mm-hmm. A key point is, again, incumbents were not drawn together. So if you're an incumbent right now and you're running for re-election, you're not going to have to run against another fellow incumbent Democrat right now. So in terms of the partisan makeup of these maps, it's not going to change much. One thing I always find is very interesting is looking at the lopsided margins here. And this basically tells you kind of the idea of how many wasted votes, if
right.
you're a Democrat, if you want to win an election, how many votes above 50% are you kind of wasting
mm-hmm.
in your average elections? And these maps still give Republicans a lopsided margin advantage, basically meaning that Republicans are having fewer kind of extra votes or too many votes than Democrats do, where it's the average Republican winning margin was 59%, average Democratic winning margin is 64%.
Right.
I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I don't believe that was that far off from what the Hickory plan had. So in terms of the partisan makeup of all of this, it's relatively the same, and Democrats are still expected to get a seat, or Democrats are still expected to get a majority if they receive the majority of the votes in a general election. So
And it's worth kind of pausing here to talk about that phenomenon you were just talking about, the overvote, right? For years in Michigan, Democrats have been able to have more ballots cast for the candidates in their party for the state House and the state Senate than Republicans are able to get for their candidates in their party. But because of the way the districts were drawn, so many of those Democratic votes were in districts that weren't in contention. And so the idea that those votes go wasted in the effort to create a majority has been a really powerful influence in our politics. The 2022 map really did reverse that in some significant ways. It got rid of this prospect of minority rule, which is something that we've had in place in Michigan for a really long time, Colin.
Right, exactly. And something I want to bring up here is going back to the VRA analysis.
Mm-hmm.
That was an initial concern of the Redistricting Commission's original VRA council, which is if you have these heavily Black districts butted up against these very white districts in Oakland County or Macomb County, that could be seen as an example of packing the Black vote in Detroit or diluting it so that you would have way too much Black overvote, which kind of was the reasoning behind why they got told to keep the Black population levels in these districts we had in the original Hickory map lower than what the plaintiffs would have liked to have seen. And for that matter, what some of the people on the Redistricting Commission felt comfortable with. So now that was another consideration that had to have been put into this redraw, which is how do you handle that, making sure that people are able to elect who they want mm-hmm. without packing them too tightly so that they get their voice diluted in the actual results of an election.
Yeah, yeah. Ben, I want to talk about the kind of, I guess, hopeful side of what the commissioners were trying to achieve originally when they drew districts that straddled borders like 8 Mile Road or other kind of hard borders in our community that for years, if not decades, have separated city from suburb and black from white. I think it's fair to ascribe some of what they were hoping would happen would be this breaking down of some of those barriers. In other words, if you draw people from Royal Oak and Northwest Detroit into the same district, you create new kinds of communities of interest. No, they don't live near each other, but we all do live in the same region. And this idea that we need to see more of ourselves in people who don't necessarily live near us or look like us, I think was part of what the redistricting commission was after. It's also one of the things that I think voters were embracing in some ways when they decided to change the Constitution and hand this over to citizens. This redraw gets rid of a lot of that, if not all of it. And I wonder if you think that that has significance, I guess, in the overall effort here and what it might be able to achieve.
It may. And, you know, if you look at the rest of the map, I mean, there were lawsuits regarding different areas, mm-hmm. not Detroit, mm-hmm. That the commission had to deal with. And they were thrown out for various reasons. So, you know, you did see challenges from other communities. But by and large, the other communities kind of just took it on the nose and said, you know, okay, we'll deal with what we deal with. And, you know, it was the Detroit, populace that really felt very aggrieved by these maps because of the things that you talked about. This drawing in with communities that don't live by them, drawing mm-hmm. in communities that don't look like them. And I think that what it comes down to is that, yeah, in the noble view, the commission was attempting to do that. But a lot of that drawing of, you know, what is it? Colin called them pinstripes. We call them bacon mandarin sometimes because they were just long, thin strips.
Yeah.
Was really done for two reasons. One, the VRA analysis, as Colin mentioned, you know, this idea that can't pack black voters into these districts. We've got to dial down their numbers to mm-hmm. make sure that this passes the VRA. Well, you know, while the VRA was not, implicated in this lawsuit, their actions violated the 14th Amendment. And I think there's, you know, some kind of just like, you know, accident by design of them mm-hmm. following into this challenge, because I don't think that the goal was to dilute the black community. Just the opposite, like you said, it was trying to embrace this idea of let's think more communally and see how we can elect the same types of people, the same community members who, you know, have been elected and will continue to be elected in Detroit, but also with, you know, with more, white and other ethnic group support. That kind of didn't happen. As you mentioned, we saw the dilution of black representation in the mm-hmm. House. Mm-hmm. And, it also goes back to this idea. Remember when they were first looking at Detroit, I think there was an observation that, oh, Detroit has these one-way streets stretching out that look like spokes. I wonder if that was intentional when they built Detroit. And so that's kind of where this idea initially came from, with this idea of drawing these spokes. That turned into this VRA situation later. But, you know, I think in the beginning, it was all meant to try to, you know, design the map around the area, the way the area looks. And that's not a race consideration. That's not an ethnicity consideration. That was a geography consideration.
Yeah.
And it really bit them. And so, you know, now with these more contained districts, you know, with these more majority black districts and opportunity elect districts, you know, the black community has a lot to look forward to in these maps, even if they're not perfect. But I wonder if it does, you know, kind of stymie what you were talking about, this idea of trying to embrace more communities for the candidates that come out of Detroit than, you know, limiting them. I guess that's to be seen.
Yeah. So Colin, kind of a related question is about African-Americans in the suburbs of Metro Detroit. There are far more African Americans in the suburbs than there have been historically. In fact, the 2020 census marked the first time that there were more African Americans in the suburbs of Detroit than in the city itself. That's partially because the city continues to lose population, but certainly black populations are growing outside the city. I felt like the original draw of the maps would have given more voice over time, perhaps, to that new kind of emerging critical mass of black voters in the suburbs, that if you had, for instance, a popular African-American candidate run in a district that stretched from, you know, the middle of Oakland County down into the city, they could draw black votes from the suburbs, black votes from the city, and, of course, some white votes. Obviously, the court didn't think that the way they did this was okay according to the 14th Amendment, but I do wonder what happens to that population as well. Under these maps, does that population of African Americans in the suburbs lose the possibility of electing someone who looks like them, someone from our community, to go to Lansing and represent the district?
I mean, that's a valid concern. And I think that's somewhere where we saw the communities of interest versus race as a whole also kind of butt up against one another, mm-hmm. where for the plaintiffs and some of the critics of the original map, it wasn't enough just to have black representation. It was they wanted Detroit representation for Detroit. And something we heard again and again, and not just in this, but in other policy discussions, is Detroiters speak for Detroiters, not someone from Redford, not someone from Royal Oak or some other suburb.
Right. And black or white.
Just to pick places off a map.
Yeah,
exactly. Just to pick places off a map, not thinking of any particular candidate or lawmaker. But what we did see in these maps is, again, for the most part, every one of the redrawn districts that butts up against 8 Mile does cross the 8 Mile divide for the mm-hmm. most part, mm-hmm. or nearly every redrawn map. There's a few exceptions there. And with those districts that do cross the 8 Mile divide, the 5th district or the 8th district or the 11th or 12th, those are ones that are still, again, either majority black or plurality black when it came down to Democratic primary voters. So you do see some sort of Southern or suburban black population still maintaining a voice. The concern there, though, is you do have districts that go above it that now have significantly less black population. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, for example, this new Royal Oak district, where now it's 55% over 55% white voters, while 3.6% black. So if you're getting a little bit more north in Oakland County, you could be losing your representation there. Same with if you get a little bit further north in Macomb County in this Warren area or going above that. But for the ones that are still closer to that border, I think that you're still able to elect a candidate that looks like you.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we'll continue talking about redistricting and democracy with Ben Solis and Colin Jackson. Would love to continue to hear from you, our listeners, on Twitter at WDET or hashtag Created Equal. How do you feel about minority representation in the Michigan legislature? How do you feel about the redrawn maps that we will use in 2024? We'll be right back with more Created Equal. You're listening to Created Equal on WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm joined today by Colin Jackson, who is a reporter with the Michigan Public Radio Network, Ben Solis, who is a reporter with Gongwer News Service. We're talking about redistricting in the state of Michigan, how different it is, how different it has been, how different it was this year when we had a late-ordered redraw of the maps to decide how we elect our representatives in the state house in Lansing. We're talking about what that redraw looks like, what it means for considerations like minority representation in Lansing, the idea of communities having districts among themselves and not being diluted by being thrown in with other districts. We'd love to hear from you, the listeners, on Twitter while we have this conversation. You can hashtag CreatedEqual or at WDET to tell us how you feel about minority representation in the Michigan legislature, how you feel about this citizen-led redistricting process, which has been a little bit messy in the early years in which we're doing it, but we do have a result. We do have an outcome, and we will see how good it is at achieving the things that we all thought we were achieving when we voted for this back in 2018. So, Ben and Colin, I want to turn our conversation to the broader idea of what we're doing here in Michigan. As I said earlier, I think it is a really grand experiment in democratic participation. It's very bold, the idea of handing this process over to citizens. But I think it's okay at this point to ask whether it's working. Is this process itself what we need to be able to have this work in a way that represents all of the people in the best possible way? Or are there things that you could see us thinking about changing, or at least considering changing, before the next time we have to do this? 2030, there'll be another census. 2031, there'll be another process. And in 2032, we'll have new maps again. Are we headed in the right direction, I think, is a reasonable question to think about right now. Ben, I'll start with you.
Well, I mean, it's what we got. It's the process
it's
that
what we have.
You know, I know that, you know, in the very beginning, there was a lot of opposition to this. There was talk, even when the commission was just starting, that there were going to be challenges to try to, you know, change the Constitution so that we can amend this process, because they just did not like the idea of this, you know, citizen group making these decisions. And you saw that kind of on both sides of the political aisle, too. There was a lot of skepticism. I think now that we've gone through this process initially, and there has been, you know, have been multiple legal challenges, one of them overturning, you know, a significant portion of the map. Mm-hmm. You know, I think people are starting to see how messy democracy really is. You put it, you know, very aptly there, Stephen, is that it was a mess and it's going to continue to be a mess. And I think that even with all of the commission's lessons learned, there's going to be new mistakes made by a new commission. I think one of the things that they probably will consider, because I know they've talked about it quite a bit, and it was something that was really left to the wayside once they were drawing, is what is a community of interest? I mean, I think they grappled with that, but mm-hmm. I think that they really need to define that if they're going to move forward with it. Because as Colin mentioned, you know, community of interest doesn't necessarily mean race. And when you do combine that with race, then you're really, you know, sinking into dangerous territory with the 14th Amendment, yeah. as we saw.
Yes.
So, you know, there's got to be that consideration. I think for the most part, though, people are happy with how this worked. People knew that we were going to be sued over this. The state was going to, you know, be sued. The commission was going to be sued by whatever actors were going to be out there and had a problem with the map. So that was expected. It was kind of expected that this might happen with, you know, them having to redraw portions of it, but they did. I think the significant thing here is that they finished what they started. You know, there were significant concerns mm-hmm. that the commission was not going to get it together, whether it was those infighting concerns or, you know, that they weren't going to create a map that met court muster, and that eventually a special master would have to draw this map, taking away the very essence of the idea of citizens drawing the map.
Right.
And that didn't happen here. They did what they needed to do. They created a map that at least, you know, remedied the situation. And the court said, all right, this is good. So, you know, they have a roadmap now for the Senate to do that. But, you know, should someone challenge the maps again after this election or the Senate election in 26. You know, I guess, you know, they've got a lot of experience under their belt. They know how to wade through this. Their attorneys know how to wade through this better now too, that they've gone through the process. So I think there is much to look forward to and hope. And I know that the people that support the commission are happy with how this turned out, despite how, you know, gruesomely messy this was.
Yeah. You know, that question about community of interest and how you define it is, as you point out, really critical. And they I would imagine they're going to have to go back and look more closely at that. But they also changed the rankings for the considerations that the commission is supposed to look at from what we had before in Michigan. And I wonder if you think, Ben, that order is also something that needs maybe fine-tuning or at least some thinking about whether it worked this time quite the way that we imagined it would.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think that there are already minds out there trying to, you know, solicit that to the commission, saying, hey, that, you know, we should kind of move this around. I think people thought that partisan fairness fell too far on the ranking, and that needs to be brought up higher, maybe higher than the communities of interest piece. But I do know, I mean, that the top bits of the ranking are federal law. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to be able to change that. That's got to be the first and foremost thing you consider. The county, respecting county and township areas and lines, I don't think that's going to change, despite how much input they get from that, saying, I really just want you guys to respect that. That's kind of really falls to the wayside compared to the other considerations. And I think it was designed that way to, you know, ensure the things that we were talking about: minority representation, communities sticking together. Also, this idea that, you know, first and foremost, we're going to serve federal law and then go downward. And I'm not sure whether, you know, those rankings can be easily changed. I don't think that's, you know, even in the authority of the commission itself. I think there would have to be, you know, amendments to that initial amendment to change the order, because that's baked into the Constitution, that order.
Right.
So,
yeah,
hard sledding if you want to do that. But it's possible, I suppose.
Yeah. So, Colin, same question to you. Is this process working? And if not, what are we likely to see over the next 6 years before we have to do all this again? It's not a very long period of time that might make it work better.
Well, I think if you look at the process, if you define working by creating fairer maps than what Michigan's had in previous elections, then yes, by most partisan fairness metrics I've seen, these maps are more fair. And from that standpoint, the process is working. I think some different points, though, where people would like to see the commission approved is just kind of around the process of it all. You know, there was a lot of concern over now that when the commission originally finished its map drawing work at the end of 2021, there was a lot of concern about, okay, now what does it do? Does it continue just to keep getting paid its full salary, its constitutional salary for the next 10 years? The Constitution says, okay, they're still working as long as they're still getting sued. Well, redistricting inevitably ends up in court. So dealing with a lawsuit is not the same amount of work as when you're spending 8 hours a day on YouTube or mm-hmm. on Zoom or in meeting a person mapping. So do you still deserve your full salary for all of that? And those are a lot of legitimate questions I think people like to see tied up. And then there's also kind of the budgetary concerns as well.
Yeah.
When the legislature was reluctant to give the commission money to fund the lawsuits, I mean, the Constitution was pretty clear about that. At the same time, you have these kind of concerns about how is the commission stewarding its money? And we've seen that brought up as well when they retroactively decided to pay themselves for the time they spent mapping during this redraw, or when they're still appealing this. You know, that could, now that the House map got approved, there's a chance that appeal could get dropped. But still, that's money they're spending on an appeal for a lawsuit that they lost, but they've still had to comply to the court decision, so they're spending money on that too. So mm-hmm. I think those are also some concerns.
Yeah. Okay. Ben Tillis and Colin Jackson, really great to have you guys and your expertise about this issue with us for Created Equal. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Steven.
All right, Kerry Jr.,
yeah.
Did your eyes glaze over during that conversation?
No. Some points, yes. Some points, no. You know, I appreciate Colin
pretty
and Ben's
dense
contributions.
Stuff, right?
Yeah, definitely didn't stuff. I mean, I do like the fact that I don't know if it was Ben who said it or if it was you who said it, but that this is an example of democracy at work. Like, this is how it works. It's not a simple process. Theoretically, we're like, oh man, we just make this decision and all these things happen, but that's not the reality.
Yeah, I think it was Ben who said that, in fact. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's a great lesson for, I think, all of us when we think about lots of different things in our democracy. Democracy is not easy.
Not easy.
It is often really messy. And the idea is that it's always evolving, right? There's mm-hmm. no end point. There's not an election that we will think, well, we're done. We're done tweaking this and it's everything we want it to be. You have to be pretty patient. Nimble and open-minded about how we get to where we want to go.
And patient.
Yeah, and patient. Thank you, Carrie. All right, that is going to do it for us on Created Equal. You can listen to recent episodes at WDET.org. And, of course, make sure to subscribe to our podcast and leave us a rating or a review. Created Equal is produced by Carrie Jr. II and David Lines. Our audio editing is by Connor Anderson, and our music is by Sam Bobian. Created Equal is a production of WDET, a listener-supported service of Wayne State University. This is WDET-FM, Detroit Public Radio, your connection to news, music, and conversation.